Hey guys, welcome to the Cloud Computing Weekly Podcast, your one stop for news information and expert advice around the emerging world of cloud computing. This podcast is brought to you by Cloud Technology Partners in partnership with our host TechTarget. This is episode 49. My name is Dave Lenticum, Cloud Computing SME author, speaker, B-list geek, and with the firm Cloud Technology Partners. And joining me, another colleague, Casey Clark. Casey, tell us what you've been up to since you've been on the podcast last.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me back. We've been doing tons of projects for lots of different firms. It seems like public cloud has suddenly become the place to go. So great projects out there and some really wonderful clients.
Yeah, it's actually tough to even do the podcast lately because we're trying to get everybody in on a Skype machine and they're nowhere near it. They're in airports, planes, and automobiles. So apologize for missing a couple of weeks here and there, but you know what? We got to work. So coming up, speaking events, fall 2014, I'll be speaking at Next Gen Cloud Expo, December 4th through 5th in San Diego, and also doing a keynote at Forecast 2014, September 22nd, and at 24th in San Francisco. If you're going to be attending those events, come see me. Love to hear about what you're doing in the world of cloud computing. Weekly reports. We have more cloud computing news and best practices. Subscribe to the Doppler Report newsletter. And you can do that at visiting cloud.com/insights. And there's a subscription button there, or you can go to cloudtp.com and find out how to subscribe. Also, we have a number of webinars coming up, and watch this space for additional details. Lots of educational things coming forward, how to do DevOps and some deeper dives in some of the cloud technologies and lots of stuff, lots of good data points out there. So before learn all you can before you jump into your first cloud computing project, let me tell you, education makes a huge difference. So the first topic, actually the second topic on your list, Casey, is Azure suffers another outage. And this happened last week. Suddenly, Azure, quote unquote, went wobbly and then took a dirt nap. And so everybody's doing the number, what I call the outage dance, and calling every cloud computing expert up and ask him about the viability of cloud computing now that Microsoft has shown a weakness. But outages, it's kind of part of the universe, I think. And I think Microsoft recovered from it, learning some lessons. I wouldn't necessarily get in a big circle and start kicking these guys, would you?
No, frankly, everyone who has ever run a data center knows that we do very complex systems and all sorts of things can go wrong. And, even if you try your best with the ultimate redundancy, sometimes things just happen. So, while we have great sympathy for Azure, when you're running a data center for a lot of other clients, you have to be so much into your A game because one little outage affects a lot of people. So feel bad for him, but
I mean, just look at the press pickup on this. I mean, everybody was like, outage. Oh my God, outage. And they call everybody else up, all the typical cloud computing experts. And they go, what about this? And the reality is a lot of them are kind of saying it's an outage. It happens. There's outages that occur typically within enterprises. This is really kind of none different. So don't worry too much about it. Do you think that we're underreacting or overreacting around these things?
Well, I think the hype may get a little out of hand, but frankly, outages are serious businesses to clients. If your cloud, your service provider goes down, it's like your electricity going off or your phone's not being available. I mean, these are core to your business, and any outages is a problem. And outages that affect more than one of Azure's customers are a problem, for every single person they're impacted. So I think it's a big deal.
Yeah, if your applications are in it and they're critical to your business, it absolutely is a big deal. So Microsoft Azure Cloud Computing Platform, wobbly for more than a week, became to experience an outage and interruptions that impacted multiple products in the U.S. and abroad. Monday's problem started close to, I think last Monday, not this Monday, is at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Standard Time on Monday. At their peak, peak affected 10 services, including cloud services, virtual machines, websites, according to information posted by Microsoft on its Azure status website. So what are some of the best practices that are starting to emerge around outages, Casey? I think one of the things that the cloud providers are learning to do extremely well is to inform clients as quickly as possible. Do you think that's actually being done?
I think they're getting better at it. I think we still have a long way to go, though. I mean, the cloud health, the service health pages are very important. I think they need to be more proactive for, though. You know, they shouldn't have to get a notification from a customer that something is wrong, and customers shouldn't have to be calling up someone in order to figure out, you know, what's the health. What are you doing to fix it or analyze the problem, and when is it going to be back up? So the level of detail that you have to provide to your customers, I think, is becoming much greater. They need service providers need to be very proactive in getting detailed information out there on what's going on, not just the high level, oh, it's sick.
Yeah, as one somebody told me one time, they said I knew I had an outage when I heard about it in the press, and that's not necessarily something good. But you know, we're actually living in kind of a news cycle that it's almost instantaneous, you know, dissemination of information out there. So in many instances, I think some of the Microsoft users will hear about it in the press unless they actively, you know, go to their websites or they're monitoring their email correctly, things like that. So communication is key. Operational excellence is key. The ability to kind of keep your systems up and running and making sure the critical applications are moving forward. The ability to autocorrect or self-heal seems to be another capability that we look for out there in cloud computing. And mostly, and most importantly, the ability not to have outages. So do you think we're going to ever be at this kind of nirvana where outages are kind of few and far between? And they're kind of few and far between now. But Microsoft, I think, has had more than its share this year.
Yeah, it has been a tough year for Microsoft, but it's been a tough year for, you know, some other cloud providers as well. You know, that resiliency you brought up, you know, how resiliency and availability has always been a game of how much money do you want to spend? How much redundancy do you want to put in there? And with cloud providers, with so many different components that they have to have in order to provide a really highly scalable system, that gets to be a pretty expensive proposition to them. So, you know, the monitoring, the resiliency, the redundancy, you know, how much should cloud providers really be investing in all this to make sure that those outages don't happen? It's a tough thing to weigh properly.
Yeah, it is. And but you know, it's funny. It's the you know, we're putting the onus on the cloud providers in essence to protect us from outages. In many instances, the onus is going to be on the enterprises to make sure that they're dealing with these properly as well. So in some instances where there's mission critical applications, you should have kind of backup systems, the ability to kind of take things to other providers quickly, or even take it on premise if the need kind of arises. And a lot of the more mission critical applications out there kind of consider that. And that's something, you know, if you're doing an architecture and working with an application that cannot stop, that runs your business, one of these things where, you know, Casey and I read the Riot Act, they say this thing's going to cost us $1 million an hour if it's down. Well, if that's the case, then you have to kind of take precautions on your own beyond the cloud provider. So certainly the cloud providers are going to do their best. But if outages occur, just like it is with any other service, whether it's power that we have or cable TV or internet providers, all the other, you know, utility services we deal with, you got to figure out backups. And Casey and I both have portable Wi-Fi hotspots that we can pull out if our internet provider goes down. So think of the same sort of an analog with the cloud. So next story, the most simple explanation of cloud computing ever from Google. Google employs 450 full-time engineers to stop hackers and other snoopers from breaking into its data center and cloud services. And today, Google published a report card of sorts on how well they are doing in these matters. I love the fact when I get to grade myself, I do really well. So the new report explains how Google's cloud computing services work and why they are safe. You know, for instance, Google's cloud uses something called perfect forward security, a special way to use encryption designed to thwart snoopers and the like, says the like say the NSA. So the report is actually a result of the third-party audit done by Ernst & Young, Google security director. Fran, is it Fingenbaum? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah, I guess you're.
Yeah. Told Business Insider as part of the certification Google had earned, it verifies its cloud is secure, known as an ISO 27001 certificate. So, big deal or not a big deal? Or is this a little bit more patting on the back than we should see from a cloud provider out there?
You know, all the cloud providers, if they're going to be serving enterprises, need to go after these certifications, and they need the work to put in the work in order to pass them. You know, whether it's ISO, 27001 certification, or AMP, or it's, you know, HIPAA HIPAA. Frankly, if they're going to serve enterprises who have to pass these regulatory and compliance issues, they're going to have to go through these. So I think it's a good thing. They need to do this, and it's nice to see the commitment.
Yeah, it's funny though. If this audit came back that it didn't do so hot, do you think we'd see this article?
Absolutely not. And some
Right.
people would be, yeah, and internal to Google, there'd be a lot of questions of why didn't we pass the first time? Why, flunking it is almost worse than trying.
Yeah. Anyway, there's two layers to the report. One is published on Google's website, available for everyone to see. You can Google away for that, which answers basic questions like where Google stores data. I hope they give the name. I hope they don't give the name and address. And where it scans its cloud customers' data into for advertising purpose. It doesn't, and so on. The other is more detailed report available on request. Yada yada yada. So ultimately, these sorts of things are going to pop out where, they're going to hire an auditor and the auditors are going to go in and look at their stuff. And I'm not quite familiar with how Ernst & Young would do security audits, but I assume it's probably up to standards and practices that most people are, leveraging today. And we're hearing about the good stuff, not necessarily the bad stuff. Would we benefit, maybe I'm reaching here, but would we benefit for common auditing services from a single independent organization that's able to audit everybody out there, and whether the cloud provider likes it or not, publish the results? It seems like it would be hugely helpful, even though I think the cloud providers would be hugely upset about it. At least the ones who didn't
Well, the
pass.
qu well, that would be a good idea, but I'm not sure it's ever going to happen. I know that any international company have lots and lots of different regulatory and compliance organizations they have to talk to. Even in the federal government, there's SEC rules, there's HIPAA rules, there's FedRAMP rules. Our own government can't find one agency that goes out and does everything that you need, let alone going to, the rules in Ireland or the rules in Japan. So if one organization that does everything, I don't think so. And oftentimes these regulations are a negotiation, between the regulatory body and the company, particularly with emerging technologies of, if this service is brand new, what do we have to do in order to get blessed to say we're compliant?
Yeah, and I think that I think that's absolutely right. So you have to kind of figure this out per industry, and also I think the audits probably should occur if they're not even if they're not mandated down at the enterprise level where people are consuming clouds. Now, folks out there doing healthcare and financial services, you guys are audited all the time, especially healthcare. They get in there, look at the way you're handling data, look at security issues, things like that, and you're fined if something's amiss. Cloud providers, also go through some audits because they have to stay compliant with certainly regulatory, certain laws and regulations that they have to kind of adhere to, and so they're audited to a certain point. But there is really kind of no common understanding or common, kind of way of measuring the clouds against the others. In fact, it's a common question at conferences, and I'm sure Casey gets asked this all the time as well. They go like, "Well, which cloud is better?" And of course, it's the natural consulting answer that everybody hates, and that is, it depends, right? Depends on what you're doing, depends on what your data you're validating, how much money you have to spend, how much performance is of value to you, things like that, what your enterprise footprint is, how your applications are architected, yada yada yada. And but that's the answer, isn't it? I mean, is ultimately it's going to be the reason we have a dozen or so cloud providers out there, tier one providers and tier two and tier three providers, is because we have different application requirements that need different types of clouds. And I think that's the way it's going to be for some time, correct?
Oh, absolutely. It depends. As answer is really the correct one because you have to understand what your application needs and what your particular service that you're trying to provide out of the cloud requires. It's also a case of let the buyer beware. They may have the HIPAA certification up there, but our clients need to dig deeper because being HIPAA compliant doesn't mean that every single service that that cloud provider is providing is compliant. For example, Google in their announcement just added Hangouts and Google Plus to this ISO certification. Well, red flag, that means that there are other services that are not certified. I know in HIPAA, Some of the services in Amazon are HIPAA compliant, some of them are not. So look at the requirements of your application, look at the architecture that you're going to deploy into that, and make sure that every single service that you're going to use is compliant with whatever regulatory and compliance rules that you have to adhere to.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that statement. That's awesome. So keep an eye out there for yourself, ultimately, and look at what the cloud providers have to offer. So do you like free beer?
I love free beer.
Amazon's got free beer. This fall, Amazon Web Services plans to reopen a pop-up loft in San Francisco's South of Market neighborhood, which is a very cool, hip area, to strut its stuff for a heavy concentration of programmers and software developers in the area. And in essence, what they're doing is providing free candy and beer. They actually have something called Beer as a Service, which I thought was pretty cool. but going forward, the ability for the folks to gather up momentum and actually sell more, recruit more developers. And so they're giving people an opportunity to come into their loft and play with their technology and see how things are working and playing well together, things like that. They're able to meet one-on-one with AWS technical support. They're able to learn about AWS through product sessions, able to gain hands-on experience through instructor-led technical boot camps, able to sharpen their AWS skills through a self-paced hands-on labs, and attend special events, including talks with successful startups and networking opportunities going forward. I think this, by the way, this is the second time they did this. I think it's a great idea. What do you think?
I think it's a great idea, too. You know, it's ultimately, people benefit from getting hands-on and talking to individuals as you go through. And Amazon's acknowledging, hey, you know, we can't just live out there in the ether. We have to make those personal relationships. We have to develop those communities and those teams. You know, that another thing is the popularity of meetups on various technologies out there. Amazon's just changing this over to their own kind of meetup format.
And it's a meetup where people are actually, you know, showing up and seeing things in person. Hang on a second, I'm playing around with my gain a little bit. Okay, we're assuming this is going to work. So I think that the ability to recruit developers is something that the cloud providers are seeing as kind of first and foremost needs to occur. There's lots of ways to do it. You know, certainly creating a compelling platform that where developers feel they can kind of make a career around leveraging, and I think Amazon's working on that. But also just kind of make it easier and approachable for folks like Amazon, for developers to approach, you know, big cloud companies like Amazon and figure out what's going on and get excited about the technology and excited what they're doing. So Microsoft's doing this, I don't think with pop-up lofts, but, you know, certainly you're moving in that direction. And certainly Google's moving this direction as well. So going forward, say, 3 or 4 years in terms of developers, do you think developers will specialize in a particular public cloud provider, people who are working on clouds, or do you think they'll stretch their skills across 2 or more cloud providers?
Well, I'll give the consulting answer of it depends. You know, certainly no one's going to go broke or be unemployed if you specialize in Amazon or Google or Azure these days. I know in our own practice, we need to have familiarity with all of them. But, you know, frankly, just like you can't get good at any one technology you know, without really investing in it, it's hard to be an expert in everything. So I think the developers will sort themselves out and say, you know, I'm mostly an Amazon shopper, or I'm mostly a Google or Azure. You know, there is the dream of portability out there, though. You wonder, you know, even with the promises of things like Kubernetes and Docker, whether we can get that portability so you don't have to learn the nuances of the different platforms as much.
Ooh, maybe a combined pop-up loft where all the providers can kind of more free beer. Perhaps even an open bar, right?
Yeah, or at least some decent wine if you're going to do it out in California with Napa and Sonoma so close by.
Anyway, good move for Amazon, in my opinion. I think that these sorts of things are fun. You know, I think cloud computing is new, innovative technology, and it should be fun. It's certainly a lot of fun on our end in learning about what's going on and your ability to kind of evangelize your own stuff in fun and innovative ways, which Amazon is looking to do. awesome. And I suspect we'll see similar things from Google and similar things from Microsoft and perhaps a few other cloud providers going forward. Okay, please pick up a copy of my book, Cloud Computing and SOA Convergence, which you can find on softback on Amazon as well as on the Kindle. Don't forget about Mike Cavas's book, Architecting the Cloud, also can be found out on Amazon as well as on the Kindle. And make sure to read my blog on InfoWorld as well as GigaOm Pro. Also, please don't forget to go to www.cloudtp.com for new current news, links to this podcast, and more ways to contact us directly. Twitter, as always, I'm at David Linthicum, LinthicuM. Where can we find you out there, Casey?
Out on Twitter, I'm at Casey Clark, KACYCLARKE. And I blog occasionally and mostly just put heads down and deliver lots of stuff for clients.
Casey's a cloud architect, man. She's out there building this stuff, solving problems, making things work. That's what it's all about. So make sure to follow Casey and just load her down with followers. Also, please make sure to support our host, Tech Target. Make sure to read my content there, as well as some great research, reporting, and events. Please go to searchcloudcomputing.techtarget.com. So until next week, best of luck in building your cloud computing solutions. We'll be back in about 7 days. You guys have a great long weekend. Have a great holiday. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.